Welcome to Build Invisible, a podcast hosted by me, Daniel G, where we explore career journeys of today's most successful professionals. Each week, we sit down with guests to discuss the challenges they faced and the lessons that they've learned along the way, from dealing with failure to the importance of being patient and listening to others. We uncover the strategies and mindset that have helped our guests build successful careers. Join us as we delve into the stories of those who have persevered and achieved greatness in their fields. I interviewed Joel Mishcon, founder of Chrome Productions, for my new book. He explained his philosophy on business and life and why you should follow your passion and trust your gut. Joel is the founder and CEO of Chrome Productions, a global creative production company creating films and programming for some of the world's most iconic brands. Starting out an extreme sports filmmaker, he founded Chrome in 2002, aged 24. Chrome has grown to become a leading player in an industry that is radically transforming and has built long-standing relationships with brands including Christie's, Sotheby's, TUI, Ford, Standard Chartered, as well as major sports teams and institutions like the RFU, the FA, the ECB, and the BOA. In 2022, Chrome was selected as one of 40 companies to take part in a government-backed trade mission to Cannes Lions, representing the best of UK creativity. I hope you enjoy my chat.
People is a really interesting topic, isn't it? Someone put into words recently what I think sums up my approach to business and my approach to my personal career. And I think that obviously resonates through Chrome and Chrome's journey and Chrome's kind of career. And I've never actually been able to put it into words until I heard this saying recently, which was long-term greedy. And it just summarized in the fewest amount of words exactly my and our, in terms of Chrome's approach to business. And what it means for me, and it's so reflective in our relationships with people and our clients, is that I don't really know where we're going, don't really know where I'm going, but I have a sense that in this lifetime, I want to leave some kind of legacy. I want to do as much as I can in the years that I have. I want to go to as many places, meet as many people, experience as many things as possible. And I feel like the career that I've chosen, or could argue that the career that has chosen me, is one that enables me to live the life that I have wanted to live, and that when I get to the end of, I can look back on and be proud of. But building relationships is a major part of that. And I'm useless at cold calling. In many ways, I'm actually, not obviously, but quite shy in terms of making approaches. I'm not one to naturally put myself out there, or certainly to put Chrome out there. I don't think we've ever really marketed ourselves in any way, shape or form. It's only very recently that, through the help of others, we're doing, more kind of social media and kind of, talking about ourselves more, but that's never come naturally for me. So I think building relationships is very much about building trust. It's about a generosity of spirit. And what I mean by that is that it falls very much into the long-term greedy aspect, that I believe that in order to get anything out of life, you have to give as much as you possibly can, even if you get less back. I believe that that's applies to our personal relationships, our marriages, our friendships, but very much in business and our relationship with clients. I've always had the belief that the more that we give, the more that we'll get back. And that may not correspond to financial gain, we certainly, you know, have probably, you know, been underpaid, you know, many times over. But I think what we've created through that generosity of spirit is relationships that have stood the test of time, relationships that don't fall away. And it's enabled Chrome as a production company to build very different relationships with our clients than maybe other production companies. And that in itself has allowed us to harbor our own business model that is hopefully going to define not only our future, but, you know, very, very potentially, very much potentially the future of our industry, which is about, as a production company, being much more closely associated with individual brands and servicing their everyday needs, all the way from small films to their biggest films. And I think that building relationships is the only, it's the only way that we've been able to do that. It's our clients trust us to look after them. They trust us to protect them. They trust us to obviously do, you know, to do great work and to put everything into it. And I also think they trust us to be a reflection of themselves, and, you know, and to not allow them to kind of fall flat on their face. And I think that that hopefully counts for a lot.
If I can just follow up on one bit there, and I'm not sure whether you're able to give any examples or otherwise, I absolutely fully agree with everything you've just said. How, if it's not cold calling, that then you do less of and more building relationships, like even like the relationship, for example, that we have together, like just through, I think it was, was it Holly that originally introduced, I'm not even sure how it came about in the end, actually. It was, of course, it was through our kids.
Through school. It was through school. Exactly. I remember it clearly. It was us having a coffee over at a kids' party in Finchley, I think, that where you said that you'd seen a film that we posted and loved it, and that was the start of the relationship.
Yes, it was the RFU Red Roses stuff.
Yeah.
Which still is one of my favorite clips of all time. You talk about like trust, put clients, put the RFU putting trust in you for something like that. Like I still to date haven't seen something as emotionally charged as that is the truth in the sports sphere generally, which is still magnificent. Anyway, I'm going off on one little tangent, but the point generally being is that if it's not cold calling that you do, and actually it's through building relationships with people that you do well, what is it, if we could break down some of the processes that you think about when you are actually building relationships with people? I can tell you what I think you do, but I'd rather it sort of comes from you. I can give you some ideas, for example. I don't need to give you any ideas, but.
I think that it's changed over the years, obviously. You know, now, hopefully, a lot of our work speaks for itself, which means that that it actually falls much more heavily on personality and trying to find, you know, connections with people. You know, back in the day, it's probably, you know, it was harder because we might not have necessarily had the body of work or the experience. But when you're still trying to, you know, bat above your station, or kind of, you know, move into areas where you're not necessarily worthy of being there, even if you believe that you are, it becomes a fusion very much of trying to instill confidence without being arrogant, trying to show understanding whilst still being humble. And I suppose more than anything, I think it's about demonstrating passion for what you do. And a particular project or a particular outcome. And I think that passion, if you enjoy what you do, if it's part of you in some way, that I think counts for a huge amount when you are building relationships and you know, the potential for new business. Because I think it's, I think passion can be infectious insofar as our clients are passionate about what they do, what their company represents. If we can naturally harness that passion that they have and add our own kind of take on it, but make them feel like we are on par, you know, insofar as we are both passionate about driving this brand forward or you know, creating a film or a series of films to either demonstrate or sell or what a product, what, you know, whatever it is that we're doing. I think passion point has to be on par, and I think that can very naturally come through from just conversations and building natural relationships.
And I think a number of the techniques that you do, because I was thinking about this just in preparing for our chat, when we chat, for example, that I'm fascinated by is you're an extremely good listener. I think, like, whenever we chat throughout the conversation, and it comes across very naturally, obviously, you've been fully aware of the conversations we've previously had, so that then you are asking connected things based on previous conversations, which is actually, I think, a very undervalued skill that a lot of people don't necessarily do.
And ironically, it was the one thing that my wives would, like, completely argue against you on.
I'm not going to start causing a domestic. But maybe there's something in particular brains, I think mine included to an extent sometimes, which separates the personal with the professional. And I'm not sure whether that's because we are living more of our professional lives because of the passion, the curiosity, the drive that we have in our professional lives to succeed and excel and keep going and keep building. And as you said, leave that legacy. Whereas sometimes that can be quite an all-encompassing, positively pressurized, but passion-filled existence a lot of the time. So that when you switch off, when you turn off, if you manage to do so, the time off is not the time that you need to be doing the same things that you were doing whilst you were in your zone of whatever technique it was you were thinking about doing.
Yeah, I think that you've hit the nail on the head there. It's when you live day to day in a almost like a constant state of adrenaline, and I suppose excitement, it's hard to switch off. You know, it's hard to find excitement outside of that. To the same level, you have to. And it's not easy, but yeah, I think you articulated that really well.
But that's the nail on the head, I think, in terms of the entrepreneurial life as well. I mean, I'm coming at this from, you know, a partner in a law firm, a much more possibly stable, traditional existence, whereas you are on the cutting edge of the creative industries of forging, you know, a world-class fit for purpose organization from scratch, and that takes, I think, in a lot of ways more risk, more dedication, more all-encompassing brain time, if that's the poor way of trying to articulate the same thing, which means that you know your identity in a way is raveled up in the thing that you do constantly.
I mean, yeah, I'd throw that back at you and say that actually becoming the lawyer of the future, which I always tell people that you are, is probably even harder, because you need to break out of something, whereas we've kind of got a, it's I suppose it's easier for a company.
I just say I plagiarize other people, creative people are doing, but yeah.
I think that something that might be helpful that's just come off the back of what you've said is, Chrome is an 18-year-old company now, which sounds like a very long time. But I genuinely still feel, and I hope I never lose this feeling, that we are at the beginning of our journey. And I think it's possibly because we've had to adapt so much, over the years, as our industry has changed and metamorphosized into other things. And I think that being able to adapt is a major component, both as an individual and also as a business. But I feel that hunger for proving yourself, the hunger for finding new opportunities and new challenges that are going to push me, push us outside of our comfort zone. I genuinely hope that never ends, because that is the driving force behind, I believe, a fulfilling and exciting career and life. And I feel as stressful, and I help our employees, sometimes, it's one of the ways that I feel like I can help, our employees here that might feel out of depth, on projects. We had recent conversations where, I've said to them, how lucky are we that at this stage of the game, 18 years in, we're still scared. We're still stressed about whether something is going to work or not, about whether we can pull this off or not. As much as that is painful, and can feel rather unhealthy in the moment, the results when you do put it off, when you do get there, and when you have moved things forward, changed the game, created new opportunities for yourself and for the business, that is, that's the only way that we can progress. For me, one of the most satisfying gratifying parts of what we are able to do as a creative business, and I suppose as someone who is growing a business. I feel I could think of nothing worse than not feeling like there's another ladder to, or another, what would you step on the ladder to climb?
Yeah. So is that trying to do everything you can to avoid complacency? But the flip side of complacency is almost feeling in startup mode. It's the wrong way, but so ingrained in the ownership of the project that's what spurs you on to do your best work constantly.
Yeah, I don't want to ever feel like our last project isn't the most important. We've been working with some of our clients, for upwards of 8 years. One client in particular, and there's been many a conversation over those years about us becoming retained, by them or moving to a retainer relationship. And I've never wanted to do that for two reasons. One, I personally don't want any business to feel like they own us, because I think that changes the dynamic. But I also, from our side, I don't want myself or anyone on the team to feel like this is just a given. That we know that we're safe for a year or 2 years. And so, we'll find better margins, or, it doesn't matter so much about this one. Let's look to the next one. For me, that's not what it's about. Maybe that's molds into the generosity of spirit, driven by something greater than money. I don't know what it is, but it's certainly something that I've wanted to protect.
If I can pivot into one other area, and again, I don't want to keep you for too long, but it's what we talk about quite often. We talk about reading books, about podcasts, about interesting people, interesting things to read, recommendations that you always give me loads of that are fantastic. And a lot of the stuff that you've pointed me towards on occasion has been to do with routine, good habits, doing things in particular ways. To the extent that you were telling me recently, I don't want to give away any stories at all, was about swimming that you do, about the routines that you have quite early in the morning, the stuff that you do generally. Has that habit, routine, whatever you want to call it, evolved over the years? Do you find comfort in that? And how productive does that make you, bearing in mind the different things that you will do over a week or otherwise?
Yeah, I've never considered myself a routined person, but actually my mornings are incredibly important to me. And I used to, you know, before I got married and had kids, you know, my weekends were filled with hobbies, you know, whether it was kart racing or, you know, driving off to the hills to go, you know, downhill mountain biking, or, you know, heading to the mountains for snowboarding. Like it was just, you know, around work, it was just pure kind of, you know, action. Then all of the sports that I that kept me going as a human. And of course, you know, when you settle down and you have a family and with work on top of that as well, yeah, that just completely fell apart. You know, my dad, and, you know, I'm very fortunate to have a great relationship with him now, but when I was growing up, he worked as hard as I worked, but he also did sport all weekend. And so, you know, the effect of that was I never got to see him. So I didn't end up having a relationship with him until I was an adult, effectively. And I suppose I didn't want the same thing for my children. I want to be, you know, a very present father, you know, in their lives. So weekends are very sacred to me. And that's family time. But during the week, it's very much about, you know, getting through the day and trying to find as much kind of, you know, energy as possible. And mornings have been the most important component in that. So, you know, I do the same thing every morning, and when I don't do it, it can really throw my whole day. It can throw my mindset for the day. You know, I'll wake up, I'll do 15 minutes of exercises, which is really just, you know, there to protect old injuries. And then I'll walk to work. And I'm very blessed to have the entire length of a park of, you know, one of London's best parks, Hampstead Heath, as my commute. And it's an hour door to door, and it's just beautiful. No matter if it's pouring with rain or covered in snow, it's, or bright sunshine, it's just the most meditative walk, you know, and just, you know, kind of journey through, I suppose, nature, you know. And it's good exercise. It's a big hill to march up and march down. And then on the other side of it, when I get to the office, I usually drop the dog off and then go and hit either Hampstead Ponds or the Lido, which is an unheated swimming pool. But and I swim all through the winter in the mornings, it's a new hobby for me. This is my second winter doing it. And a few people were telling me about it, and it got me intrigued, and I can totally see why, because an hour's walk and a cold water swim before I get to my desk literally makes me feel like there isn't anything in the day that could happen that I can't cope with, that I can handle. You know, especially in the winter, you know, it's 6 degrees in the water at the moment. The assault on my body's senses, you know, first thing in the morning, and the recovery from that as you warm up, it's the most incredible. It has the most incredible ability to make us be able to not only attack the day, be like full of invigorated energy, but also, you know, to be able to deal with the general kind of day-to-day stresses that can very easily become, you know, over-consuming. It kind of puts everything into perspective a little bit, and it just makes you feel good and strong and alive. So yeah, it's in a very short space of time, I can have the type of adrenaline rush that it might have taken me, a day of traveling and hiking and whatever else, would be to get it.
Hello, and welcome back to Build the Invisible with me, Daniel G. In addition to sharing insights and lessons on career success, I'm also the founder of a charity fashion brand called 13. At 13shop.co.uk, you can order hoodies, t-shirts, and socks, with all proceeds going towards cancer research. So not only can you evaluate your personal and professional development with the insights shared on this podcast, but you can also support a great cause with your purchase from 13. Visit 13shop.co.uk today to browse our collection and make a difference. Thank you for supporting Build Invisible and the mission of 13.
And before the world of COVID hit, and when you were obviously traveling a lot more and on sets and shoots and whatever else it might be, were you able still to have those types of ingrained routines in different ways? Or did was it harder to motivate yourself to be able to be like, I need to do this exercise, I need to have this me time, I need to have this invest, it feels like it's almost investment time to make yourself be better at the job that then results?
Yeah, when I travel, and this year I really haven't traveled. I was supposed to be traveling, I would have probably been away for half the year this year. And last year I was traveling to the States for about a week out of every month. But I would always stay in a hotel that had a gym. And I would always, because I'd wake up very early, when I'm in the States, usually doing short trips. And I'll always, again, start my day with a walk. I'll just go out and I'll just, and I'll walk. And then I'll hit the gym and, not do anything aggressive. It's really just the same kind of workout that I normally do every morning. But yeah, that before I have any meetings out there, that's just kind of what I need for mental focus. And during that time, some mornings I want the headphones out. I literally feel like I'm going to get more out of it by just being in my own head. And other mornings, I crave kind of information. So it's my opportunity to listen to other people's stories, learnings. And I find those in audiobooks, which is really the best opportunity that I have for reading. And I suppose I've done that all the way through, having Chrome. I started Chrome at 24 years old. It was really the first job, that I'd ever had, other than delivering pizzas at Pizza Hut at uni. And it's, so I hadn't have anyone to learn from. I miss that. I envy people that have started businesses having learnt from the mistakes of others. It's definitely a shortcut that I haven't had. So it's taken longer, I would say, to get to where I've where I'm happy to be at. It also means that the only way that I can learn is by listening to and reading about, other people's experiences and trying to pick little, bits out of it that resonate with me and either teach me something new or just compound, either a sense of a feeling or a sense about something that I have.
There's a great book that you may have already read already. Use that word compound. Just then in your last sentence, and it just made me think about it. It's a book called, I mentioned to a few other people, called Atomic Habits. And James, I'll send you a link if you need to. It's a guy called James Clear. He wrote it about a year or so ago, and I got a few people recommended it to me. And his first chapter is all about this idea of compounding. Just like the miracle of compound interest.
Yeah.
But the miracle of compounding your knowledge through very small changes, compounding your habits through very small changes, and compounding your network by keeping on looking to expand and to build relationships, exactly as you sort of mentioned, which is, you said, generosity of spirit. And one of the themes that I'd sort of started writing in my book was this idea, but I hadn't called it that. I'd called it something like, you know, you've got to be, as soon as you're not static, you're dynamic. That was my sort of phrase,
yeah,
very corny one at that. But what I see in sort of the sense that you're saying as well is like all of those compounding effects of everything that anybody does builds and builds and builds and creates new pathways and creates opportunities, gives you things to talk about, gives you things to hear, gives you things to learn and to listen on. And the crazy thing I'm beginning to realize is the sort of, the more I learn, the less I know is almost the thing that is great, but also extremely demoralizing is not the word, but extremely overawing, I think, if that's the right way of saying it. And that compounding thing has really sort of resonated with me, which is the whole idea of doing more creates more for everybody.
Yeah, completely. I do think that fits very much into this, you know, generosity of spirit, that giving a little, you know, helps you get a lot completely. Something else that I don't know whether this is useful or not, and just from business terms, but as a sort of guiding principle that I've found really helpful is actually, it's something that I experienced before I even started my career, just when I was learning. So after uni, I decided that I wanted to film, and I was, you know, heavily, you know, passionate about snowboarding. So, you know, I decided I was going to make ski films or snowboard films, and that's I wanted to be an extreme sports filmmaker. So I went off and I traveled for 3 years, you know, working in bars at night, but basically teaching myself how to film. And, you know, in the process of doing that, ended up doing avalanche courses and whatever else, because I was more interested in the backcountry and that kind of thing. And on one of the avalanche courses that I did, there was the wisest guide. And, you know, when you just bond with someone, you know, kind of on a soul basis or whatever it is. And, you know, he said that, you know, he said, you can explore all of the science around, you know, avalanches and whether a snowpack is going to collapse, you know, and that's what you do when you go, you know, backcountry skiing or snowboarding. It's a great metaphor for life, really. You know, you dig a snow pit, and you dig down right to the base, and you can see all of the layers of the snowpack. And in between each layer of kind of, you know, lovely fluffy snow, you've got this layer, this danger layer of kind of ice. It's called hoar, and that's what you've got to watch. And it is really in between each layer, this tiny thin strip, that means that if it goes, you know, it's how many stacks of snow are gonna kind of fall and tumble. And he said that you can explore all of the science and you can read all of the books and you can do all of the courses, but nothing is as powerful as our gut instinct. And you as a human, is what he told me, you as a human have the most unbelievable gut instinct, and you have to listen to it. He wasn't talking individually about me, he was talking about humans in general. But that really, that is our greatest tool, and it's something that I was tested on more than once. You know, in an avalanche context, you know, when I'm out in the backcountry and I've felt a negative gut feeling about something, and I've decided not to do something as a result of it, or not to take the professional athlete that I was filming, you know, on a particular traverse. And you know, in one particular example, I had a massive argument with someone where I turned away and I said, I don't think we should do this. And they said, we should. And we did it yesterday. And it just didn't feel right to me. Wind had changed. You know, there was something that just didn't feel right. And an hour later, when we would have been in the middle of the traverse, the entire snowpack fell away. A cornice fell, and it took out seven of our neighbors, our neighboring house where seven people live, and five people died. We would have been part of that pack. You know, they went ahead as I was kind of having this argument. And, you know, from that point on, it made me realize that, yeah, we really do have, you know, we do have a gut instinct, and I have a gut instinct, and you know, that I need to listen to it. And, you know, more often than not in life, very much in business, we only have our gut to go on, because we're dealing with things that we've never experienced before, that no one's taught me how to do this, or do I hire this person, how do I handle this situation, how do I fight this fire. These are nothing that we can be, that you can be taught, or that you could read in a book. But I have definitely learned to kind of trust my gut and to listen to my gut and to follow it. And, I suppose it's stood me in better stead than pretty much anything else. I think in business.
Very cool. Very cool. Let's leave that there then, Joel. I don't want to take more of the time. And then if there's anything that then, that you think of, even if it's for a 5-10 minute chat in the new year, or when you've reset and want to have a chat about anything else in particular. I was thinking about the whole disappointment, resilience, and F word, basically.
Yeah,
kind of thing that I think would be quite interesting to sort of.
I think that's a really interesting one to touch on. That's a whole nother topic in itself. So I think that I think we should definitely talk about that. It's really interesting. I mean, I'm very happy to touch on it now. I've got to half one if that's helpful. Let me just think about it for a second. So I'll see whether I'm just going to see whether anything comes to mind in terms of resilience. And I think business is no different to everyday life. Unless you have the lows, you can't appreciate the highs. Unless you have the kickbacks, you can't appreciate the kind of glory of a win or of a success. Unless you're sick, being healthy, has no meaning. Very much, that responds to our emotions as well. If you don't experience sadness, how could you possibly appreciate being happy? And I think in business, business is just an everyday test of that balance of life, I think. People talk about learning from, mistakes, picking yourself up off the floor, coming back stronger. Doesn't mean it doesn't hurt, every time. It doesn't mean it doesn't make you question, what you're doing or how good you are, whether you even have a place at the table. But if you can find it in yourself to say, to brush us, to get up, to brush yourself off and to say, right, I'm going to turn this to my advantage. I don't feel good right now, but I know where I'm headed, and I'll take this as a hit. I'll take this as a learning. I suppose coming from an extreme sports background, the only way that you can progress is to get hurt. Is to put yourself into precarious situations, because otherwise you simply cannot evolve as a sportsman, as an athlete, and actually from out of resilience, I think there's another component to it which is also really interesting in business, I found, which is risk taking. And that very fine balance point, the tipping point between calculated risk and just straight risk. And I feel that, it was my dad that instilled in me from a very young age, this kind of notion, whether he ever said it in these words, I don't know, but whether it's just the way that he led his life, and I've just made up my own saying off the back of it, I don't know, but when I think of my dad, I think of someone saying to me, do something every day that scares you. And I did that in sport, and I've done it in all of my travels and adventures, and in business. I feel that you can get the furthest when you carry an element of that. But when you also run a business, it becomes very much more than just about you. You know, I'm responsible for all of the lives of the people that work at Chrome, and their families and their well-being. And I, as much as, you know, as much as that petrifies me, it is also the most amazing feeling to feel like we as a business can help make everybody that is part of this business's lives better. So when I take risks, or when the business takes risks, it's a far greater weight to carry than me, you know, jumping off a cliff on my own, or whatever. And I think that, you know, over the years, getting knocked down, being rejected, working really hard and not winning certain projects, you know, even losing certain people, you know, that I care about, you know, from the business as they've gone on to, you know, to do other things. All of those rejections just helps make the desire to take calculated risks, you know, that much greater. And I think that, you know, something that I hope we as a business are good at, that I have become better at, is sitting back, like recognizing where I want to get to, but sitting back, taking stock, and knowing that at the right time, I'll know what to do. That's the way that I built my career. I didn't know where my career was going to take me. I just had an overriding sense that it would fall into place if I followed my passion and if I worked hard. I just felt that it would just slot into place, and it did, and it has. And I may have been very lucky, but I also, you know, and it's a wacky word, but I suppose without even knowing what the word meant, I manifested it. And I think that really applies to every decision. If you know where you're going, you've just got to wait until it feels right. Even if the odds are stacked up against you, and even if people tell you that you shouldn't do it, if it feels right and you feel it's a risk worth taking, then take it.
So is that in part, maybe I'm overgeneralizing it, the more resilience you've been able to come through particular setbacks, you're more comfortable with yourself at taking risks with the possibility of failure because you know what the worst that can happen is?
Or you can live with the worst that can happen, yeah, because there is a chance, a strong chance, a belief that even if the worst does happen, that the possibility of, you know, if you can live with that, you know, then the chance of getting back to all of the things that we, yeah, talked about, you know, the feeling of being challenged, the feeling of pushing yourself, you know, the feeling of new horizons, new adventures, all of that, you know, if that is a potential that you could achieve out of taking this risk, then sometimes, yeah, it's worth taking the chance of losing something in order to gain something, you know, potentially bigger or better.
Rather than not putting yourself out there because actually your fixed mindset is more protectionist in idea, in terms of not wanting to risk, because actually you're probably subconsciously not aware of how fragile or brittle or otherwise you might be if everything falls apart.
Yeah, fear can be crippling. You know, fear can really, you know, fear leads to stagnation, and stagnation, you know, leads to, I believe, you know, unhappiness. And look, in my career, I have, you know, I've had certain setbacks that are very much linked to me as an individual that I've, you know, very much had to overcome. Just when my extreme sports career was taking off, I injured my back, you know, in a way that changed the whole path of my career journey, you know, and two surgeries later, you know, it's, you know, the path that I was on, which was my dream, that I just managed to put into reality, was literally like cut blank, you know, or cut short from an injury. But it allowed me to, you know, adapt and move into a more commercial kind of environment, still carrying the same ethos of you know, of adventure that I would have got from extreme sports. But it's actually allowed me to grow a much better business that, you know, is hopefully going to serve my, you know, children, you know, far better in their futures. You know, and I think that, you know, health is a major, you know, factor in actually, you know, us as individuals being able to achieve our goals. When earlier in my career, where I believed that I was capable of something, but I had nothing to prove, I found, you know, just speaking candidly, I found, you know, interactions with other people that I respected really overwhelming, you know, to the point that, you know, I would genuinely be so fearful of being, you know, in a sort of network environment. It was a total fear point for me, you know, and I got very physical effects off it, you know, panic attacks. You know, I would, you know, for I remember for a couple of years, I would, you know, like feel like I was profusely sweating. You know, even if I wasn't, it would just be that feeling of just like being so out of control of a situation, because I felt like I couldn't prove, you know, that I was the person that I believed that I was, and that actually had major kind of polarizing physical, you know, things, you know, or even, you know, mental hurdles that I had to overcome. But fortunately, just through, you know, I always push myself to, you know, despite literally having a, you know, a fear of those kind of environments, I always force myself to enter them. And then eventually, ultimately, you know, thank goodness, all of those things have kind of, you know, passed. And now now I actually, you know, quite enjoy, you know, situations like that. So, you know, I'm not entirely sure what my point is, other than you have to push through sometimes incredibly challenging periods in your life, and you have to somehow find a way to climb over, you know, obstacles that feel like they are completely crippling. And actually, when you do repeatedly, you can ultimately end up controlling your ability to move forward or not.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Build the Invisible with me, Daniel G. We hope you've enjoyed today's conversation and took away some valuable insights and lessons. If you'd like to learn more about the strategies and mindset discussed on the show, be sure to check out the book, my book, Build the Invisible, and the accompanying BTI journal, both available at www.buildtheinvisible.com. We also encourage you to leave us a review and subscribe to keep up to date on future episodes. Thanks for listening.